On the evening of August 18th, 2012, in the city of Carrollton, Texas, a dramatic 911 call was received by the Carroll County Sheriff's Department at approximately 8:30 p.m.
Carrollton 911, what's the address of the emergency?
I've been shot, please.
What's the address, ma'am?
1525 Boulevard Way.
What's the phone number you're calling from in case I need you?
972-939.
Tell me exactly what happened.
A big came in my garage, and I was getting out of my car, and a loud person shot me. Please help me.
Yes, ma'am, I've already got help. Started your way. Don't hang up, and I'm going to get some questions answered from you, okay? How many people was it?
It just wasn't. I'm aware.
Did you see him?
Yes.
Was he white, black, Hispanic?
He was white at least. Dark hair.
How old?
I don't know, maybe mid to late 20s, 30s.
And what color shirt was he wearing?
I don't know. He was wearing a black cap. Oh, help me.
Yes, ma'am, they're already on the way. Just you stay on the phone with me, okay?
I'm trying.
Yeah, I know. I can't imagine how bad it hurts. I just want you to stay on the phone. Did he pull up in a car?
Did he what?
Did he pull up in a car, or did he run away?
I don't know. I never saw him. I guess it ran away. I don't know.
Okay. Are you by yourself?
Yes. Oh.
Did your garage face the front or the back?
It was the back.
But is that where you are right now?
I made it to the front. I'm going to lock my front door.
Okay.
I'm sitting in a chair by the front door. Oh, my God. Help me, please.
Yes, ma'am. They're already on the way. What's your name?
Debbie Howard.
Okay. All right, Ms. Howard. Like I said, they're already on the way.
Help me, Jesus. Help me, Lord Jesus. Is it police?
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, help me.
Yes, ma'am.
Help me. Help me.
Is that them?
Help me. I don't know what to...
Okay, I'm going to let you go, Ms. Howard, okay?
I'm sorry, but I don't have the energy. Help me. Okay. Oh, help me. Help me, Jesus.
The voice you just listened to, crying for help, belongs to a 51-year-old woman by the name of Nancy Howard. Nancy had just arrived home after attending a baptism at the church that she and her very religious family frequented. 1 hour before this 911 call was received, at 7:30 p.m., Nancy stopped on her way home at a Taco Bueno, and then continued back to her place, and pulled into the driveway. She opened the garage door, parked her vehicle inside, and before she knew it, a man had his arm around her neck with a gun pointed towards her head. He demanded that she give him her purse. Nancy fought with this man and managed to pull herself away and look directly into his eyes. She also looked directly into the handgun that was pointed at her face. Her adrenaline was through the roof and slightly impairing her ability to think clearly. So instead of handing this gunman her purse, she reached out and stuck her bag of Taco Bueno into the middle of his chest. When the gunman pushed the food away, he got angrier and started swearing. Nancy then handed him her purse. He took the purse, pointed the gun down towards Nancy's face, who was now kneeling on the floor, and fired a single gunshot directly into her left eye. He then ran off. Nancy collapsed and fell unconscious. Several moments went by before she started to regain consciousness and comprehend everything that just happened. Laying in a pool of her own blood, Nancy used whatever strength she had available to crawl to her vehicle. She opened the door and reached up towards the emergency response call button. Since the vehicle was not turned on, this button was not working. So Nancy forced herself up onto her feet and walked inside the house. She managed to disarm the home alarm system and then went directly into the laundry room, which was only a few steps away from the garage door. She looked up at herself in the mirror. She described what she saw as horrifying, and the reality set in that she might die. She walked into her kitchen and called 911. The police and medical responders quickly arrived on the scene and tended to Nancy's injuries. When officers asked her who did this, Nancy replied, "I don't know who they were. It was a man that looked about 20 years old, that had a strong chin, facial hair, and black rimmed glasses. He was also wearing a hat." She was then transported to the hospital, where further medical treatment could be provided. Hospital staff stated that it was a miracle that Nancy was alive, as the bullet had actually traveled through her right temple and partially through her right eye, down her throat, and then lodged into one of her lungs, somehow missing any other vital organs. Nancy's husband of 29 years, named Frank, was out of state at the time of the attack, traveling for work. Officers struggled to contact him, so instead they contacted one of Nancy and Frank's daughters, who then got a hold of Frank. Frank apparently had a very emotional breakdown over the phone and then immediately rushed to the airport to fly home. He arrived the next morning, where he met up with his two daughters and one son. They all went to the hospital together. Frank stumbled through the hospital as he wept profusely, clearly in a state of total shock and concern. He then arrived at Nancy's room and stayed by her side. Once the hospital staff informed him that Nancy's outlook was very promising, he managed to regain his composure and speak to the police.
"Can you update me on her condition, what the doctors have said?"
"Yes. It sounds bad when you say somebody shot me, but actually very, very good. No brain damage, none of that. She'll lose her left eye, but from there it will be cosmetic stuff."
What I know about her, it doesn't seem like she would have many problems with anybody. Is she?
"Oh, no, absolutely not. Nancy can be giving in. And open. Somebody came to the door, and they just needed money to get a hotel room because their car broke down."
"Mm-hmm."
And
they came to your house?"
"To the house, mm-hmm. Yeah, at the front door. And she told them, she's just so, on good heart, she just said, that she would help, try to help them find a hotel room. But, if there's, you put up a reward or do anything like that, whatever. But anyway,
once we get to the point where we've exhausted all of our investigative leads, that's another step we would take.
I'm just saying, just whatever we need to do.
Because obviously money can prompt people to do, to give information. Would you have a problem if we ran an analysis on your cell phone?"
"No."
After providing investigators with his cell phone, Frank then went back to caring for Nancy and being by her side. A few days had gone by before officers began to focus on Frank's possible involvement. This is because Frank's cell phone indicated that he was having a long-term affair with another woman named Susan. Frank hadn't been away for business. He was actually staying with Susan. Since investigators were suspicious of Frank, they asked the hospital to no longer allow him to visit Nancy. So Frank was cornered into telling both Nancy and his daughters about the affair that he was having. He stated that this was the only reason that the police were suspicious of him. His daughters then said, "Dad, you need to get a lawyer." Frank then lawyered up, and the focus on him slightly subsided. Investigators then decided to look into other possibilities and re-examine any evidence that they could get their hands on. In doing so, they made several new discoveries. One discovery they made was Nancy's purse dumped in a nearby dumpster. They located this purse by tracking down her cell phone, which was still inside. What was strange about this discovery is that they found Nancy's driver's license had been removed from her wallet, leading investigators to believe that the perpetrator was confirming her identification before dumping these items. The next discovery was made while reviewing the security footage from the church that Nancy had attended hours before the shooting. In this footage, they could see Nancy pulling into the church parking lot and then parking her vehicle before heading inside. They could also see that Nancy was being followed. This silver vehicle pulls in behind Nancy's car. When Nancy enters the church, the vehicle drives off. The vehicle then returns, parks, and a man can be seen entering the church. Using the washroom and then returning to the car. When Nancy exits the church and drives out of the parking lot, this vehicle proceeds to follow her. Unfortunately, this footage on its own provided little information to the investigators, as the resolution was too low to make out any distinct facial features or license plate numbers. While reviewing this footage, another officer pointed out that she had a strange encounter one evening in the same neighborhood as Frank and Nancy's home, just a few weeks before the shooting. This officer had pulled over a vehicle that was registered to an address multiple hours away in East Texas. She witnessed this vehicle driving aimlessly through the area for several hours. This encounter was recorded on her cruiser's dash cam.
White Honda Accord. So how long have you been in Carrollton tonight?
Been trying to find my uncle's house for
2, 3, 4 hours.
Okay. The reason I asked because I saw you guys earlier, and I see you again, and it's now it's...
We're going circles and circles.
Can you step out of the car just for a second? I want to talk to you a little bit.
The vehicle had two occupants. The man driving said his name was Dustin Hyrums. When asked why Dustin was in the area, he replied that he was looking for his uncle's house. He then changed his story and said that he was looking for his stepdad's house. And then finally, he said that he was actually looking for a house that belonged to a family friend named Mr. John.
Tell me who you were visiting here, because now I'm confused. You said uncle, and then you just said it was
John.
Okay.
We always called him John. Okay. That was it.
So John's a friend of the family.
Yes, basically. We're not trying to cause no problems.
The two were allowed to drive off that evening. However, investigators felt that these two men could quite possibly be involved in the shooting. So they brought pictures of these men to Nancy and asked her if she could ID them. Nancy said that it was neither of these men. About a week after the shooting, investigators received a phone call from the county jail. Apparently, there was an inmate by the name of Billy Earl Johnson that claimed that he had details regarding the shooting and that he wanted to speak with the officers working the case. So, they did just that. An interview was arranged with Billy Earl Johnson.
You know, I mean, I got a reputation to be a badass. I mean, everybody's claiming me to be tough and bad. I don't claim to be tough and bad. I'm mean. I'm gonna hurt you. If you jump on me, I'm gonna hurt you. I'm 49 years old. I done been through a pen total 15 years. Mm-hmm. I got grandkids that I want to spend the rest of my life with. I want to be free, and I want out this weekend. I got the big ace in the hole, and I got the ball in my court on this. If y'all want this murder, this attempted murder solved, y'all need to work with me because I ain't playing. Y'all want it, I'll give it to you in a fucking golden basket. I'm not giving up nothing until I got something solid on my end. I'll die with it.
I don't think this woman deserved what happened.
No, she sure didn't. But if,
and she deserves a little bit of justice.
Yep, and she'll get it. But I want my back scratched too.
Maybe not from you.
I want my back scratched too.
Billy continued to withhold information about the shooting until investigators offered him a deal. The full details of said deal have not yet been made public. However, one of the stipulations required Billy to provide information that could confirm the legitimacy of his claims. So Billy began to describe Nancy's vehicle.
She ain't had it long. It's brand new.
Okay.
It's dark blue, it's a four-door, it's got like a hatchback.
Once the officers felt that the info that Billy was providing was credible, they reached an agreement. Billy then started to unravel the mystery of this attempted murder. Apparently, Mr. John had heard stories about Billy, and on one random afternoon, Billy received a call.
I was laying on the couch and the phone rang. How he got my information from them, I don't know. He just said, you don't know me, told me his name. Said, I don't know you, but I was... caught word that you might be the one to do a job for me. He wanted it done, actually, so it wouldn't come on him. Like a carjacking, purse snatching. It was two of them that done it. One driving, pick them up, and one that pulled the trigger. Now, which one drove, which one pulled the trigger, I don't know, but I know both of them. That number right there?
1764.
That's John's contact number, if he still got the phone.
That's how you call him?
Yep.
How many conversations have you had with John regarding this being done?
Numbers.
More than 10?
Yeah.
More than 20?
50, 60.
As it turns out, Billy was considered a ringleader of an East Texas gang known as the Hee Haw Gang, and he proclaimed that this man named Mr. John was actually the one that arranged to have Nancy shot. Billy also mentioned that he knew other people that could corroborate these claims. One of these people was the man that we saw during the traffic stop named Dustin Hyrums. Dustin was actually Billy's stepson. Investigators then contacted Dustin and brought him in for an interview.
You're a good kid. You got yourself messed up in a little thing, but you're a good kid.
She didn't do nothing wrong.
a Christian woman, dude. That's a, you know, who shared with you that she's a Christian woman? John did.
Although Dustin was admittedly high on methamphetamine during this interview, he still made it clear that this Mr. John character was a high roller, and that he was throwing money at everybody in an attempt to persuade somebody to kill Nancy. Dustin also made it very clear that there was over a dozen people that were well aware of this murder-for-hire scheme. One of these people was a man by the name of Charlie Louderman, who Billy had hired to be his bodyguard. At this point, Charlie was already behind bars, so investigators arranged an interview.
So have you heard about the shooting in Carrollton?
Yeah, I
heard. Everybody else heard about it, and you know who it involved?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Billy Earl John, Mr. John.
Mr. John. So you know Mr. John?
Yeah. And Billy Earl's out there, he is one mad son of a bitch. This man, he tried to get me to kill that woman.
Did he really?
That he could get
you want to do it?
Yeah, I want to do it.
You got that recorder on? Yeah.
I've got to have it.
Yeah, you goddamn right, that son of a bitch tried to get me to kill that woman.
Charlie corroborated Dustin's claims that Mr. John was the money man. Apparently, Billy Earl Johnson was the man initially hired to shoot Nancy. When Billy decided that he wasn't going to do the job, he tried to pawn it off onto several other people while taking a portion of the pay. When this did not pan out, Billy decided to run a long-time con on Mr. John, squeezing every dollar he could out of him. He would spin stories, saying that the day he went to do it, the cops were nearby, or that there were too many people. Basically, he would say anything that he could to push it another day. He would then ask for more money, which Mr. John would provide. He bought Billy guns, tractors, cars, basically anything that Billy wanted. Mr. John would originally provide this money in cash, but when Billy kept requesting more, Mr. John became lazy and started to send wire transfers. Charlie also told investigators that he knew somebody with a picture of Mr. John, so as investigators waited for the picture, they decided to trace these wire transfers. In doing so, they found that Mr. John had sent multiple members of the Hee-Haw Gang a combined total of $850,000. And when they finally received the picture, it all became clear. Mr. John was actually John Franklin Howard, aka Frank, Nancy's husband of 29 years. Frank was immediately arrested and charged with solicitation to commit capital murder. He was held on a $1 million bond. Frank was so highly regarded by the community that several friends and family members pooled their money together and managed to post his bond within days of his arrest. While Frank was awaiting his trial, officers moved forward with the two names that Billy Earl Johnson provided as the trigger man and getaway driver. One man was actually Billy's nephew, named Michael Speck. The other was a man named Michael Lawrence. Since Billy stated that he was unable to specify which of these two men did what, there was a lingering question as to which of these men would be facing an attempted murder charge. Investigators then decided to comb through Billy's jailhouse phone calls. While doing so, they found a familiar voice.
Hey. Hello? Hey. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. What's happening?
Hey, I can get out of here. It's going to take about a month to get out of here, but I need some money.
Well, I mean, what happened to Michael? I gave him a bunch of money.
Well, how much you give him?
And I don't even know anymore. It's been so long.
Did you give him 20?
At least.
See, I just wrote Stacy a letter and told her that he, in other words, he probably you and me.
Well, and that's what I'm saying is that, so I mean, it's that keeps happening. So I got nothing left.
So where'd
well,
that
obviously,
money go?
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Where'd all that money go? Because he's got it all. I told him, I said, this is the last I got. And he said he'd go take care of it. He'd take care of everything. And I have heard absolutely nothing from him since. So that's my problem. I got nothing left.
Yeah, nothing?
No, I gave him everything.
There ain't nothing you can do.
I gave him everything.
Although this recording seems to heavily indicate that the trigger man was likely Michael Speck, police had also received a phone call from a woman named Misty Ford. Misty stated that she was Michael Lawrence's fiancé and that he had confessed to her that he shot Nancy that day and presumed that she was dead, and that Michael Speck operated as the getaway driver. Although this statement was quite damning, officers still weren't confident who had done what, as some of this information was conflicting. So, Both Michael Lawrence and Michael Speck were charged with aggravated robbery and conspiracy to commit the murder of Nancy Howard. Throughout this entire investigation, Nancy Howard would claim that she just did not believe that Frank could have been involved. The two were happily married for 29 years, and they had 3 kids together. As a family, they were very religious and went to church every Sunday. They were all very involved in the community, and Frank just did not display any characteristics of the type of person that could have done this. However, Nancy's opinion began to change as everybody awaited Frank's trial. She stated that in 2009 to 2012, when Frank began a new job working as the CFO for a man that provided resources to the military in Iraq, that he became a different person. She said this version of Frank was much more confident, yet much more mysterious. Anyways, Frank's trial took place in August of 2014, and Frank's infidelity was highlighted as the likely motive for him to hatch this murder-for-hire scheme.
North Texas man's affair was front and center in court as prosecutors tried to convince a jury that he tried to have his wife killed. John Franklin Howard is on trial for attempted capital murder in connection to the 2012 shooting of his wife, Nancy.
Well, yeah, court just officially went into recess, ending week one of testimony here, and it ended with the wife that investigators believe Howard tried to get rid of, and the woman, the other woman rather, they say might have been partially the reason for it. John Frank Howard's double life was front and center in the closed-to-video Denton courtroom today, but the pictures inside show the emotional ride he took as his wife and mistress both told their stories. After detailing the night she was shot in the face, Nancy Howard talked about her difficult rehab, but the even more difficult moment when Howard told her by phone in Parkland Hospital that he was having an affair with Suzanne Leontief. Prosecutors even showed a photo taken from Howard's desk in his Grapevine office of him with Leontief and her kids. Now, she told the jury she was in love with Howard and living with him in a condo in California, but says she was getting fed up with a divorce from his wife being promised but never actually happening. But the defense says the affair is not the question in this case. They're not even questioning that it happened. Attorney Ricky Parrott says his client isn't on trial for adultery. This is about the murder-for-hire charge. That will likely become focus next week when the people Howard's accused of hiring are scheduled to testify.
During the trial, the prosecution presented several pieces of evidence which seemed to outline Frank's involvement. The evidence included a breakdown of phone history, which included calls between Frank and Michael Speck, some of which took place throughout the day of the shooting. Pictures of spreadsheets that tracked every transfer that Frank made to the Hee-Haw gang, as well as a detailed breakdown of Frank's 3-year affair with his mistress Susan, which included a second home and a condo, as well as documentation that showed that Frank had given Susan $500,000 in cash and spent about $1.9 million on the lifestyle for the two. They would also present a text message that Susan had sent Frank in the weeks before the shooting, which they believed may have been the catalyst for this shooting to take place. That text message read, "I'm so sick of being alone. You need to file this by Friday or move on. I have waited long enough." Frank replied to this message in a love letter, stating that he is working on it and that he knows what he needs to do. The defense attorneys claimed that Frank had actually been blackmailed and that the credibility of the prosecution's witnesses left something to be desired.
I do not believe, as reasonable people, you can convict someone on the testimony of the kind of people they brought in here that their house of cards has to be built on. And it starts with Billy Johnson, and it ends with Billy Johnson. Because I do not believe that's the kind of evidence in this country that we want to use to convict someone of a crime, to deprive them of their liberty if they're convicted.
They would also claim that the idea that Frank would want his wife of 29 years murdered as a way out of the marriage was preposterous, as Frank had already gone through a divorce in the years before he and Nancy got together.
Where in the world is any evidence been told you that divorce is unacceptable, Mr. Howard? He's already had a divorce. He's been married once. Look at the evidence and ask yourself if that's what that means.
Ashley, Jay, and Brianna each testified for their father, telling the jury what a kind and compassionate man they'd always known him to be. They weren't in the courtroom for the presentation of most of the evidence, but when they were, they sat behind Frank. During the closing arguments, the prosecutor would call Frank sick, after presenting to the courts an email that Frank sent Nancy on the day of the shooting.
I know you have a busy day today, because he knows her schedule. He's provided it to the two Michaels. So I will try to call you sometime today. I love you and can't wait to get home to you. That's sick. That is sick. He wanted to get home to her casket. That's what he wanted to come home to.
The trial lasted nearly 3 weeks, but the jury only needed 2 hours to reach a decision.
Has the jury reached a verdict in this case?
Yes, we have, Your Honor.
And is that a unanimous verdict of each and every one of the 12 jurors in this case?
Yes, it is.
Please hand that to the bailiff. We, the jury, find the defendant, John Howard, guilty of the offense of attempted capital murder as alleged in the indictment.
John Franklin Howard was found guilty of solicitation to commit capital murder. During Frank's sentencing, Richard Raley took the stand. Richard was Frank's ex-boss, the man that hired Frank to work as a CFO during the years 2009 to 2012, when Nancy said that Frank had changed. Richard told the jury that over the 3-year period that they worked together, Frank had systematically embezzled over $30 million from him. This was the money that Frank used to pay the Hee Haw gang to commit these crimes. Prosecutors concluded that in addition to his extramarital affairs and a building disdain for his wife of nearly 30 years, Frank must have known that a divorce would have exposed his financial misdeeds. John Franklin Howard was then sentenced to life in prison.
The Denton County man convicted of trying to hire someone to kill his wife was sentenced to life behind bars. The jury's decision for John Franklin Howard came earlier today. Yesterday, the same jury found him guilty in the murder-for-hire case. NBC5's Brian Scott is live at the courthouse with the details. Brian?
Brian, after nearly 3 weeks of arguments in this one, John Frank Howard's fate is sealed. He will likely never walk free again. Today, a Denton County jury sentencing him to the maximum, life in prison after convicting him this week of attempted capital murder. The motive, they said, was an affair he admitted to having with a woman in California. An emotional Nancy Howard told John Howard after sentencing that she had loved him dearly and he tried to take everything from her, destroying their family in the process. The defense says they will appeal, but they were prepared for the worst.
He's exactly where he needs to be. We're very thrilled with the verdict we did receive, especially it was very comforting to Nancy Howard.
Now, the Howard's adult daughter, Ashley, was also in the courtroom for sentencing today. Obviously, an emotional day for her, and she declined to comment. However, all three of the Howard's kids have stood behind their father during the trial, testifying they didn't believe he did it.
Following Frank's sentencing, Ashley, Jay, and Brianna were visibly very angry. All three of them left the courtroom without saying bye to their mother. During the trials of the two Michaels who were accused of being the trigger man and getaway driver, Michael Speck actually turned on the other Michael, Michael Lawrence, stating that he was in fact the shooter. Michael Lawrence was then sentenced to 60 years behind bars. He quickly appealed his conviction, and in 2017 it was overturned on the grounds that evidence related to the murder-for-hire scheme was misleading. He was retried and found not guilty. However, the prosecutor decided to change his charges and have him face trial for taking part in the conspiracy to commit the murder of Nancy Howard. He went on to make a plea agreement and was sentenced to 10 years in prison, while Michael Speck was sentenced to 12 years after testifying against him. Billy Earl Johnson has never been charged for his role in this murder-for-hire plot.
It was a living nightmare.
That is how Nancy Howard describes the last 2 years. Yet looking at her today, you would never know the pain she has endured. In August of 2012, as she drove into her garage, a gunman pulled a weapon and demanded her purse.
I physically shoved my purse into his chest and I said, "Jesus, save me." And he shot me.
Nancy was shot in the face.
Gurgling blood, having a hard time breathing.
She knew she needed help quickly.
I heard God speak to me, and he said, get up, get up.
Bleeding, she first crawled and then was able to get up and walk into her kitchen and call 911. The bullet entered her temple and lodged in her right lung. Her survival, miraculous.
It is a miracle, and that's my God. My God is more powerful than a speeding bullet.
While recovering in the hospital, Nancy got a call from her husband of more than 30 years, Frank Howard.
He tells me that he needs to tell me something that is going to come out, which is that he had been having an affair.
While that news was a surprise, Nancy soon got more shocking news that Frank had been arrested for hiring a hitman to kill her.
I was in disbelief. I truly was in disbelief.
Police say Howard planned the hit for more than 3 years so he could be with his lover, who he lavished with expensive homes, money, and gifts. This month, Frank Howard went to trial. His mistress took the stand.
What was it like to face your husband's mistress in court when you saw her in court? Everything doesn't sound pretty, but everything from the bottom of my guts wanted to just throw up. I was just sick.
We, the jury, find the defendant.
Frank Howard was convicted and given a life sentence. Afterwards, Nancy got to address him in court.
I told him I forgive him for the lies, for the adultery, for busting up our family.
Nancy lost her right eye, the bullet still lodged in her lung. Her recovery has been excruciating, but she turned to her faith to strengthen her. It was also her faith that allowed her to forgive those involved.
I still feel some very deep hurt, but if I wasn't able to forgive, bitterness would just take over, and my life would be controlled by that bitterness, by that anger, by that rage.
She says God didn't spare her life to be angry, but to turn her pain into purpose, to tell her story of survival, to help other hurting women.